and welcome to Homeless to Homeless, a ministry of Gospel Rescue Mission. We're a team of Christ followers on a mission to help others find hope and restoration. Please listen in every other week as we share the inspirational stories of individuals who overcame extreme challenges and found a new life in Christ, moving from homeless to homeless. We are here today interviewing Mateo to hear a little bit about his story. So how long have you been clean and sober?
I've been clean and sober for a little over a year and a half now.
A year and a half?
Yes. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yes, sir.
Tell me a little about yourself. Where are you from?
I'm from Tucson, Arizona. Born and raised here. Born in St. Mary's.
Awesome.
Went to Flowing Wells for a little bit. Did drop out, but...
So did I. I went to Flowing Wells, only lasted one semester.
Yeah, yeah. So, I kind of grew up on the Northwest side. Yeah, that's kind of a little bit of my childhood. Was born into first a Catholic family. Mm-hmm. My mother was born and raised Catholic, but thank God she found Jesus, because she, as you'll learn further into my story, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but she has been a pillar even long after her passing. But
did she introduce you to Christ?
She did. Now, my brother and sister were also I have an older brother that's 11 years older than me and a sister that's 10 years older than me. And they were both raised the same way, but didn't receive it as well. My sister was on fire for God all through her teenage years. Mm-hmm. And it inspired me kind of. But I wanted to know that God. And I would talk to my mom like, you know, she would bring me into church and we'd do the church thing, but I wanted to know him deep, a deep connection. So I didn't find that until I was about 8 years old when she finally, a little bit before that, she sold herself out completely to God and went from the legalistic Catholic, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, more the traditions.
More the traditions into just selling yourself out for Jesus. And I wanted that so bad. I wanted it. I wanted what my sister had. She was on fire. My brother, not so much. He was still a little bit worldly or whatever. More because he would see the fruit of what my dad would call religion or, you know, still the Catholic stuff. And that fruit being sour fruit and him and, you know, being still abusive to my mom and being in and out of jail, my brother was like, "I don't want that God." So at eight, I finally committed myself to Christ and said the prayer, but believed it. Mm-hmm. And from then until, even today, God has been present in my life, regardless of how far I've ran from him. As you know, I'll continue in my testimony to show you, but he's been present. And my mom she's been that avenue or that door that's opened up to me and you know, to show me Jesus. So
you feel like you ran from him?
A lot. Even in jail cells, like I'd hit my knees and just wear out the floors in jail cells. I'd get out and, you know, he'd get me out. Mm-hmm. He'd get me out of a situation and show me like, "I'm still here, son. I still love you regardless," but yeah. And show me a better way. Like I'd have mentors in my life, you know, I'd have, a support system in my life and he'd offer that to me, but I would still run. I'd have reservations, you know, I'd jump into toxic relationships that I shouldn't have been in, or I'd just like deny him any access to my life by just jumping right back into alcohol. And
So what happened? Something obviously happened early in your life that caused that separation, that pulling away.
I think it began, well, I know it began after losing my Nana and Tata.
That was kind of
one significant point at 9 and 10. They died a year apart.
And that was were you close to them when you were growing up? Were they a big part of your life?
Absolutely. They were the staple in our family that kind of like held us together. After that, cousins, aunts, and uncles, they would just kind of, we kind of just spread apart. Mm-hmm. So family was, that was the significant part where family started like losing its meaning to me, its deep, definition to me, I guess, is what. And so I would, by 11, I was just with my mom after my parents divorced. I was just with mom. My brother left to California to join the Marines.
But by that time, he was probably in his early 20s.
Yeah. And he was just sick of it. He'd seen so much abuse with my mom and dad.
Is that why they split up?
Yes, absolutely. She had grown sick of it. She gave him chance after chance, broken promise after broken promise. And my dad was just, he'd go through recovery like I have before too, and just fake it till he made it in a way. And then, he wasn't ever serious about it. It wouldn't last. So
he struggled in his own addiction.
In his own addiction. Yes, he sure did. So there were times when he would be in and out, of jail, right? And he would be in and out of recovery programs and things. He was actually at the mission, before as well. I distinctly remember times, when my mom would drive me there. To the old mission, which is
29th
crazy.
Street. Yeah.
And to just visit him and just to let him know, we're still here. Like, we're still fighting for you. My sister didn't want to have anything to do with him. Cut him off. Brother didn't want to have anything to do with him. Cut him off. But I still had hope. Like, I still knew a Jesus as close as my mom did by that point, by 11, to where I was like, God can still do something here with you, Dad. I'd still, have those conversations with him at that young age, like, but just hold on. Like, I trusted, in hope, in a redeeming blood that maybe he did at some point sometimes, but didn't take it serious. I don't know. Or if it was just like to try to get back into the family.
Well, as in your own walk, we each have our own relationship with Christ.
Absolutely.
There's some points in our life where we're just holding on to him tight. Mm-hmm. And the tighter we hold on to him, the more he gets inside of our heart, changes our lives, and we're just on fire for that, right?
Yeah.
And he does a powerful work. There are other times in our life where we fail to hold on, or maybe we just take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
We can make bad decisions.
Yeah. Because his presence almost, in our minds, in our fleshly minds, we think like, it's not enough. Like, why aren't you here? Where are the miracles that I saw when we were so close, Jesus? Like, you almost lose sight of it because he's not doing enough, or he wants to see like you put a little more effort, and it's a walk. It's a constant walk. And I saw that with my father, my dad. And
not to get too far off track here, but I think of it as a marathon.
Yeah, it's not
because
a sprint.
It's not a sprint.
Yep.
I love that.
Yep.
But there are times on this marathon where I'm running hard, I'm running fast. Mm-hmm. There are times when I've stumbled on a rock.
Yeah.
There are times when I've just been so tired, I've just sat down on the side of the road. Been through all of it, but it's a continual moving forward. You always get back up, you get back on the road, and you run further because we're all waiting for that finish line.
Yep.
And at the end of that finish line is the, well done, my good and faithful servant. Well done, my son.
Yep. Just like Paul talked about, my focus should be to finish the race, not to do it well. I don't have to do it perfect. God didn't ask us to do it perfect. He just asked
us. He did it perfect for us.
Exactly. Exactly. He showed us the way. So, yeah.
Okay, so your parents went through this very difficult divorce. Yeah. Your father went through recovery, yeah. Pulled away. So, what happened with you?
So, me, it was just me and mom from then on until my brother actually graduated the Marines and he came back. And I would say it's about 14, 15 when I was years old. And he came back and he was just a very angry, bitter Marine. Like he just hated life. Been through a couple of tours and just very bitter. So when he came back, it was like a tough love to me. He would see me rebelling and trying to find a quote unquote family in like gangs, gang violence, and you know, running around with the crowd like that. And he came back and he was just like, what are you even thinking? Like, what, you have your mother here? And I'm like, she's not enough. What are you, like, who are you? Like, he'd snap on me and about like getting me back to knowing what family was, but in a tough way. Like, he's like, how come you're not contacting your cousins? Like, you know what, this isn't your family, your stupid little gang. Like, what? He'd see me rebelling and would inflict that tough love, and that turned into physical. I remember one time I was in an argument about, I think it was like homework or something, like something real small with my mom. And he was in the bathroom taking a shower, living with us for a little bit. And he heard me tell her to shut up. Now, it's not the worst thing I've ever told my mom in my rebellion. Regretfully, I look back and I'm like, gosh, I've said some really mean things to my mom in my rebellion. But he heard that. He heard me tell her to shut up from the bathroom. He came out in his boxers and just like grabbed me and like was like in my face, screaming at my face, smacked me. And like I snapped. I was a little bit older. I was a little bit bigger. So I was like, I'm not going to take this. This is abuse. And so we fought and in front of my mother. Oh. And she was just screaming. And that was the first time that like I heard my mom like in traumatic, like screaming, like say, like stop, like trying to rip us off each other. Like, you love each other. Stop. They're your brothers. Like, and she said, all right, I'm calling the cops. And she did. And the cops showed up, questioned both me and my brother. And I told him, what he did, he initiated, but they're like, but what did you do? And I'm like, cause I love law enforcement today, but back then I was very rebellious and I was up against, law enforcement. And I'm like, you can't take me to jail. Like, I was self-defense, claiming self-defense and the bottom line is like, we did this in front of my mom and it was wrong. And it was a sin to fight. I think back to like Cain and Abel, when, he killed his brother, like they did it in front of their parents and like what their parents might've gone through. So they took us both away. That was my first charge, my first like serious charge. I had like thefts, retail thefts before that, but that was my first serious charge, and I went to juvenile Department of Corrections for it. Did 9 months, came out. I found Jesus, obviously. I mean, I found a Jesus, what I call the jailhouse Jesus. A lot of people call it that. I became a Bible thumper. I was serious about changing my life and just surrendering and forgiving my brother, just on fire. Came out, went right back to the youth group that I was going to, summer camps with and stuff like that. Became a youth leader.
Oh, cool.
On fire for God all over again at 14. And
just like you were when you were 11.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a rekindling. And it took being locked up, which is a common theme in my life, as you'll learn even more. But it took me getting broken down and finding that jailhouse Jesus. But he's there. I want to say this. I want to get this out of there. God is present wherever you are. He will go to the depths of hell to make sure that you know your worth. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that people hear this, because like, regardless of whatever part you are in your life or how much sin you've committed, he is not a respecter of persons, the word says, and he will go to the depths of hell to make sure that you know your worth. And he did. So I got out. It's not the end of it. I got out, was on fire, became a youth leader, started mentoring, you know, my peers around me, would do like, you know, outreach things and stuff like some random act of kindness, you know, things, just on fire for God. And then Satan crept back in, though. He crept back in with now substance. Like he kind of, I would start working at.
So you must have been a little bit older.
A little bit older. So I was 16, started my first job. My sister actually got my first job at EG's. And that alone, like I don't want to blame it on restaurant, but if you've worked restaurant, you know, those environments are not something that like a weaker Christian can work in. I was strong and I was on fire, but I was still young and I was still fresh and still ready to rebel. Substance crept in. I had a friend that at actually my second job, which was Wendy's right down the road, who introduced me to weed, to marijuana. And that was, to me, quickly became my idol. It quickly became something I would go to to deal with some trauma or things like that that I could have done in prayer. Or I like to use that as an excuse that like I was going through so much trauma. I was
at the time you were going through something,
and that was kind of my escape. It wasn't hardcore alcoholism or some of the more drugs that I have had yet, I had experienced or indulged in yet, but it was an open door for Satan to come in and be like, ooh, but look, you feel good when you're here. You escape when you're here. You're intoxicated and this feels better than the trauma that you're going through. So here's a buddy you can rely on. Here's some friends that you can hang out with. And it just opened the door.
So what did that do for your education, for your family life? How did it impact other areas of your life?
Dropped out. I was first year into Flowing Wells. Actually doing pretty well. Like I was struggling in some classes and things like that, but I went through a program in Flowing Wells that kind of lifted you up to mm-hmm. to like help the struggling students, like kind of just find a new avenue and show them like, here's a career that you can, or here's a trait that you can, you know, things like that, that you can build upon or look forward to, be hopeful for. And I didn't want that. I wanted to play football. I wanted to like go right into, transition from junior high to high school. And yeah, football was my life. Like I'm not trying to hear that. I can have C's and D's and still play football. I'm a good football player. I'm not trying to hear any of that. And I thought that was my avenue in life, was just living that.
Were you on the team?
Yeah, I did. I made the freshman team, but my coach was kind of like laughing at me. He's like, you have no idea. You're still clouded. Your mind's clouded now. I can tell you're high when you come to school. Like, you're tripping. That's what my coach would tell me. Like, you need to get your grades up and you need to snap out of this or your life's going to take a whole different turn. And it did. Counselors would sit me down and say the same thing. And I would rebel because I'm like, who are you to tell me? Like, I'm a Christian. I'm a leader in my church. Like, come on. You're the ones that are tripping. And so it made me rebel even more against authority. Like, authority was trying to point me in a direction. And I was like, no, that's not who I'm supposed to be. So it pushed me even further into rebellion and further into what this quote unquote family was that was getting me high and you know, enabling me to live that lifestyle. So I dropped out, but my mom was still there, and she's actually accounts receivable for 24 years at Pima Community College. And she pulled some strings and got me into a program that if I finished my GED and got my GED, they would let me start taking some college courses. And they were general education mm-hmm. courses, but they were through Pima Community College.
Did she work out of 4905 East Broadway?
Yes, she did, actually.
Okay. I used to work there. So. Yeah,
her name was Jackie Grijalva, I don't know.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
No way. Mm-hmm. That's my mom. That's awesome. My mom there. So yeah, she worked there at the corporate office, and then she was at West Campus mm-hmm. before there. And so, yeah. And she pulled strings for a lot of people. I wasn't the only one. Like she has that servant's heart where, like, if she sees somebody struggling, she would find a way.
Well, Pima College is a great place to
find
that next level in your life, whether it's through education or just giving you the experiences and the tools that you need to.
Yep.
So did you go the GED route?
I did. I went the GED route, finished it, and took some college courses. But to me, at that point, college quickly became a reason to even socialize even further into the world and party, let's just say it. That's when I'd say about 16, 17, I started drinking, and alcohol became a big substance that Satan was mm-hmm. using to cloud my vision and steer me away from what God had planned all along.
And at this point, you're probably hanging out with the kids at Pima College, so now you're hanging out with an older crowd.
Yeah, and a very sexually immoral crowd, a very liberal crowd that just kind of was just, it's a free-for-all in college. Not all college students, you know, like some of them take it serious and create good careers, but that wasn't my intention. I had reservations. So I dropped out of college, started working, still in restaurant, still in that crowd, still in that lifestyle. And by 18, I had elevated from marijuana and alcohol into harder drugs like cocaine. And 18 was just kind of like that mark where I was just like, you know what, God, just step aside at this point. I have a life to live. I'm free. I don't have kids. I was just careless at that point at 18. So
that's the time where everyone just kind of finds their own way.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
Cocaine, I would have to imagine it's an expensive habit.
Yeah, it really was. Living paycheck to paycheck was because I had an addiction. I could have saved up money. I could have, you know, turned my life around and started using it for ministry, like the ministry that I was in youth group. And
Were you still plugged into a church at this time, or had you been moved?
Yeah, still at Faith Community Church, still doing some things that I am proud of still today. Like I've prayed with people and talked to people that back then still remember me having like an impact on their life, but I don't recognize that. It could have been better.
So when you say faith community, do you mean Brock's church?
Yes, Bruce Brock. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, and they, it's a lot different today. I've returned a couple mm-hmm. times, but it's a lot different today. But it's still that. When I drive by,
Bruce is still there.
Yeah, he is. And I drive by and I look at it and I'm like, gosh, so many memories and stories that God reminds me of, that he has always had a plan. Jeremiah 29:11 mm-hmm. has been one of the solids in my life, and that my mom always, we would quote that on our way to school when I was little, you know, and she would have me quote that or recite that in Psalm 23 on our way to school. And like, now I see it. He's always had a plan to prevail, or a strategic plan. And I'm seeing it now today, but all through all my rebellion and everything, it's been a pillar, and I never lost sight of it. And I deny it. I think like that's just a cliche. Jeremiah 29, this is just like 29:11 is just something that people say and quote over their lives and pray over their lives. But it's real. God really said that, and he mm-hmm. meant it about my life and about your life, you know, about all our lives. He really means it. He has a plan that, you know, of good and not of evil, you know, to give us a future and a hope. But we deny it. We run from it. Israel was denying
it. How many times did Israel run from
it? And he used the weeping prophet to say that, and to he spoke through him to get that into Jeremiah 29. So I finally see it now today. But back then it was so hard.
Okay, so what brought you to a place where your eyes suddenly started to be open when you realized God had a plan for your life?
So
when did that happen?
Yikes. Let's fast forward to my 20s because the birth of my son, in 2005, my son Donovan, kind of woke me up, but not, it did wake me up. I was living in Illinois, tried to run from Tucson to Illinois and run from all my sin.
Just trying to make a new life for yourself, kind of a thing?
Trying to make a new life for myself.
So I wouldn't call that running. I would call that a fresh start.
True. Yeah, initially, you're right. Because my sister was like, okay, you're going too far. I was in some dark stuff here. At 21, the day after I turned 21, she's like, I'll pay for a Greyhound for you to come out to Illinois, move to Hanover, Illinois. Population, 850 people.
Oh, wow. That would be so different.
Yeah. It was a culture shock.
I mean Tucson calls itself the biggest small town, but we're not.
Mm-mm. 850 people is like, it's a shock to say the least. And when I first touched down there, like I took the bus to Chicago. She picked me up and she's like, you know, now we are a very small town. You are going to be bartending and you're going to have a spotlight on you. So I need you to be on the best of your behavior. Like this is a 10 year senior, my sister, like
right. kind of
talking to me and mentoring me, like trying not to tarnish our name.
Well, you walk in there, everyone's going to know who you are and that she's your older sister.
You have no idea. So, and especially bartending, like she, the family she married into, my brother-in-law's family, they owned a bar on the corner of this small town. And so she's like, here, you know, here's our new family that you're looking for family. Here's our in-law family. And I got close to them and, you know, but I was bartending and still in sin. And in a small town in the Midwest, drinking is, it doesn't matter what profession you are. I mean, even pastors out there, I'm not saying every pastor, but drinking is very well prevalent. So I ran from one sin or one environment of sin to another. And that family that I had now, you know, confided in and was drawing close to, they had introduced me to one of their friends, which would eventually be the mother of my child, of Donovan. But she was younger. I was 21 and she was 16. And that quickly it became, I kind of like rattled the, shook up the hornet's nest with that, because here is Matthew Grijalva coming into a small town, trying to date one of our daughters, like that's, and he's much older than, that just stirred up a hornet's nest. And, that included law enforcement. I was not charged with the statutory. And I want to say that, like, I want to make this very clear, like, I could have been, and I regret that sin. I do. But I see that, like, I was charged for a criminal trespass, being in her parents' house, and fighting with her dad about this. Like,
they called the cops. So a lot happened there.
They called the cops, and I was removed from that situation, did some time for that. But it could have been a lot worse. I could have a statutory rape charge on me, which I'm very ashamed of. I should have never been in that relationship. Should have never followed Satan's lead into that sin. But I did.
And can I ask how that relationship is now?
That relationship now is distant, to say the least. Very distant. We both kind of see the sin in that relationship, and have, and it became toxic because we tried to live together after the birth of Donovan. Like, we tried to excuse it and tried to live together, and it became very toxic because it was built on lies. It was built on sin. It was not, there was no foundation. And, we were young and I was still partying and, you know, so it didn't completely wake me up, the birth of my son, but it did give me a focus as being a father. Mm-hmm. And to say that, like, I know now what it feels like to love something more than myself. So it didn't have any foundation, though, like I said, but...
Your eyes were starting to open, though.
Yeah, at that point. When you have a child, like, your eyes... Your perception of, like, life kind of flips, whether you're in sin or not. Like, it becomes you. Like, you, that's your identity. That's your legacy you're passing down. And I wasn't passing down a very good legacy at all. I continued to sin, like I said. Yeah, I got
locked
up.
So moving forward from there, at what point did you come back to Tucson?
So, at, I want to say, what year was it? 2000, we'll fast forward to 2015 after violating, getting locked up and violating probation, violating parole, being locked up so many times. I had gotten sick of it. I had gotten sick of who I was becoming. And so did my mom. In 2014, she, was struggling with cancer. She was at the towards the end of this fight with cancer, because 2014 was when she was diagnosed, and in 2015 is when my brother had finally gotten a hold of me. He was living out here for a while, and gotten a hold of me and said, "You can come stay with me for a little bit till you get on your feet, but I'm sick of you throwing away your life out there and listening to our mother weep and beg that you were here and in close." So he kind of sucked it up, all his resentment and everything like that, and invited me out here to move with him to start a life back in Tucson. So
this was a little bit different than the other transition, because the other one was, okay, let's make a fresh start.
Right.
And this one was... not necessarily to make a fresh start, but for mom.
Yeah.
To be closer to her, to be closer to family. Were you trying to restore relationships that time with family?
I was, because like I said, I I tried get when I would get out of jail, when I would get out of being locked up, I would be on fire for God all over again. And I'd realize that so many things that like have happened, I need to repent of and then bury. And that couldn't happen if I just kept that bitter root. And that bitter root being that resentment that I'd have with my family and, you know, the broken promises, things like that, that I've drug through my life, that I haven't dug up and I haven't cut out. And
that, so you went through an extended period of time of falling into drug use, falling into alcoholism, prison time. And that prison time was time that you spent being separated from the world.
Yeah.
And because you were separated from all of that, that fire grew.
Yeah.
Again, for the Lord.
Yes, absolutely.
But then you were out and that fell away eventually because of what? What happened?
So things like just being back and hold back in touch with old friends kind of was my downfall. I would distractions, like just going back. All I really knew was working in restaurant. Like all I really, that was my calling. That was my purpose. Like I feel like that's something that God had was building up to this point that we are today, was just being of service, but to the world. Like I was open to serving and, you know, having God use me, but I let Satan manipulate that servant's heart into pouring myself into a worldly environment like restaurant, and he used that. And so every restaurant I've worked in, I found a friend that would have access to cocaine or access to partying or access to, you know, whatever. And I would confide in that friend or a couple of friends, that group of people that were like me, like they'd thrown away their families. They'd cut off, they bridge burners, as I call us. And they were like me, and it was okay to fit in there. I felt comfortable there. I would call every friend that I would find there, like brother or sister, or like, you know what I mean? And that was a
lie. Do you feel like you burned your bridges with your family?
I have. I've cut off a lot of people. We'll use my sister and brother, for example. My sister, when she invited me out there at 21, I was living with her. And I stole from her. I stole money. I stole jewelry. Things that I would pawn and use to buy drugs and live this lifestyle, and she got sick of it. I stole actually from my own nephew. I stole an Xbox from my own nephew, and it breaks my heart to even think about that today, just so I could get another hit, just so I could chase a lifestyle that I was, you know, just stupid things that I've done, to burn bridges, to cut people off and say, your relationship or our relationship together is worthless to me. Compared to this lifestyle or this getting high all the time, it takes a back seat compared to, like, and that's why family, even today, it's a struggle to get a hold of some family. And I can't say it's, you know, relationships, the miracle has happened where those families' relationship with me have been fully restored, but I believe in the blood. And I believe in redemption, that God is still working with that blood in my life. And there's a hope that I stand on. And I mean, hopefully, I've been in contact since I've graduated here with my brother and with my sister. But they're still wary. They're still like, there's doubt. Like, you know what I mean? They don't want this to be temporary as it has before, because so many times I've gotten out of, you know, jail and just been on fire and contacted, hey, you know, I'm doing great now, you know, and then a week later, I'm throwing it all away. So they're sick of that. Understandably so.
Yeah.
A lot of people that...
But it hasn't been
right.
a week. It no. hasn't been a month.
Exactly.
It's been, what, 18 months?
About around then.
Have you ever gone this long being sober?
No, I haven't. And, but I can say this is that, God's still working on me. Like there's still, like I said, I didn't want to come do this testimony yet because there's so, this path and this journey, is not finished. And that's the best part. That's my favorite part is that.
Oh, dude, your journey isn't finished until he calls you home.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, we're all in this walk.
Exactly. And that's the best part is that I'll struggle. I'll fall. But the difference between back then and now is that he's so more present. I'm so much more closer to the shepherd and knowing his voice. An example of what a brother here told me is that it's in the shepherd's voice that like when you're close to the center of the flock, right? You can picture a flock of around a shepherd, right? Just standing there. When you're close to the center of the flock, you know his voice, you can hear it well. But the further you get away, the devil's just prowling around. He's that wolf that's prowling around, just licking his chops, waiting for one of us to draw a little bit closer to that edge and snatch us up.
Because all he wants is to steal, kill and destroy.
And destroy. And that includes families, relationships. That includes careers and callings and careers, purposes in life. All of that. Like he's ready to kill, steal and destroy that. And he's just prowling around that flock. Today, I'm closer to the center of that flock and closer to the shepherd and knowing his voice. That's the difference today. That's the difference today. And I'm not arrived. I'm not complete, but I'm closer to the shepherd today than I've ever been. So, yeah.
One of my earlier questions, and we haven't come around to it yet, was what brought you to the place where you felt like you said, okay, I'm ready for this cycle to end. And I'm sorry, how many years were you in that addiction?
Oh, well, since I want to say 18 strongly in, since 18, strongly in addiction, strongly in complete rebellion and trying to run from God. Yeah, back and forth. Like I said, I've found God again. I've come back to close to the shepherd, but like, man, there were times when...
When did you decide to come to Gospel Rescue Mission? What brought you to this place here?
Well, this time here, I had come before to Gospel Rescue Mission. I will go more recent. I had come to check into the workforce, right? This was, I think, 2021. About 2020-21. I came, checked in, ready to surrender to God, really ready to find something, but I was only in workforce and I had other reservations. So let's rewind a little bit to 2018 is when I actually lost my mother and she had passed away. I didn't lose her. She's actually still right here. But she passed away and I lost my rock. The bottom kind of fell out and I went into a horrible, deep, 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 dark spiral. I was checked in at the old mission, but still had reservations. Still, like I wasn't ready to surrender to God in 2018, but ready to find something different. I checked into the Gospel Rescue Mission, and met somebody in Iowa, actually, jumped into a toxic relationship in grasp of trying to find something. You know, I was spiraling down and I was in darkness and drinking my life away after I lost my mom. And I thought like gripping a relationship, I didn't know it was toxic at that time. Gripping that relationship was trying to find something to hold on to. I moved back out to Iowa. Or Midwest, but in Iowa, and that relationship turned toxic very quickly because I was working back in a bar. We were both drinking, and it was just adding, dousing kerosene onto a fire of depression and that I thought was okay. I thought I could handle it after leaving Gospel Rescue Mission. And then so that happened, and it became toxic, became abusive, and both physically and verbally back and forth. I got locked up out there again, all over again. And I ran from that again. I ran to Gospel Rescue Mission again. And that's in 2021, I believe, when I came and checked into Workforce. However, God was still present. Like there were people, men, mighty men of valor here that were placed here, that poured into me here and were kind of like, why aren't you checking it? Give him a year, God. Just give God a year. Like pleading for me, begging for my soul to just finally find something. And I was just like, nah, I'm good. I got this. Like God's a part, still part of me. Don't worry, guys. You know, they take me to Water Walkers Bible study and they'd give me rides there. And just two really strong, mighty men of valor that I found here. And even in Water Walkers, I started developing some relationships there. But they, the men that I met there, the men that are, you know, still prevalent in my life today, even stronger, saw it back then. They were like, you're not ready. We see it. You're on fire. Yeah, but something about you is just one foot out the door. Sure enough, I moved back out to Iowa. Got my first check. I was working at Sam's and got my first check there and dipped out of here. Ran from God again. What's new, right? Like here we go again. Went right back into that relationship. And sure enough, was arrested again. Did a little bit of time there in Iowa, but as soon as I got out, I wasn't on fire for God like I was in. I didn't find the jailhouse Jesus that I did this time. I got out and I was ready just to throw it all away again. At this point, I was just drinking and back into cocaine and falling out outside of bars. Like I had a public intox one time where I passed out behind a bar, just puke all over myself. And there's a mugshot of me it just looks like a sinister smile, a grin on my face that I knew Satan had that much of a grip. Like you could see the evil inside of me in this mugshot. And so
it sounds like you just didn't care.
There was no care, no regard for my life at that point. And I was just very suicidal. I became very my life didn't matter anymore. Like I felt like I would be doing everybody a favor by just ending it all. And I posted something on social media about suicide hotline, right? And a lot of people were commenting or like trying to get a hold of me through social media, like, what's up, man? Like, what's going on? Like, why are you here? Why have you come to this point? And I'm like, I just write them off. I'd isolate, or, you know, the ones that I knew actually genuinely did care, I just tell them, you know, this is it for Matthew. This is it. Like, I'm done. You guys, thank you for checking up on me. Thank you for everything. But I feel like I'm doing you a favor. And I sat in Dubuque, Iowa, just kind of rotting away. And finally, a youth pastor that I grew up with got a hold of me through social media, through Messenger.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of watching you do this. Like he's seen the progression and the rise and the fall through my life. Through social media, we were kind of distant, but he'd get a hold of me, you know, while I was in Illinois, while I was in Iowa, and just check up on me. And for some reason, it's just been that connection with him, man. And he got a hold of me after seeing this dark post that people were like, no, good. Like he's like, what's really going on? Are you ready yet? Are you ready like to surrender? Are you ready to give God the rest of your life? Because you got way too much potential. You don't remember what your mom has instilled in, what she's prayed over you. Like you've forgotten that, but I'm here to remind you, like you have something bigger than you in this calling. Like it's something bigger. And reminding me that, pouring me into about that. And I was just bawling and he's like, all right, we're going to take action against the devil today. He can't have this victory. He can't have my little brother's soul. He said, I'm buying you a bus ticket. I'm paying for the hotel room for overnight. You're taking the bus up to the hotel you're going to this hotel across the street from GRM and you're checking in the very next morning. And if you don't, I'm going to hunt your butt down and we're going to do this the right way. Or do this the hard way, he said. And I did it. And on all my way here, this last time in 2022, I felt something. Like I felt God just like, it's his way. Like we talk about the prodigal son, right? And how he's on his way. That was my vision of me coming up here on the Greyhound. And that of the vision of like the prodigal son walking on that path, like that roadway to the father. But what I read somewhere in a book is that story is more about the father than it is about the prodigal son, actually, because you think about it, he booked it to his son. Like he saw him from afar, it says, and he booked it to his son and he wrapped himself around his son. Back then it wasn't okay to hug people like that as men. Like it wasn't okay for men to hug men like that in public. He made a public spectacle of it to embrace his son and say, welcome home. Welcome home. You're like, here's this ring. Here's this coat. We're frying up this fatted calf for you today. We're going to have a party. He ran, he booked it. And so I think of like how God was pulling me that whole way. I'm just envisioning and I'm in my word and like envisioning God reaching down and pulling me out of this flood. It says in Psalm 18, it says he reached down into the depths and he pulls you out. And that was my moment, like where I was like, I can't turn around. I can't jump off this bus and head back to Iowa or Midwest or whatever. I can't keep running from God, period. Period. This is it. This was my moment where I came in, checked into the hotel, woke up that next morning at 4 a.m. and came over here and sat in line, went through the process, gritting my teeth because I'm like, I don't want to do this. I had reservations still, but... And I'd walk through here like that first couple months. I remember like I was talking to Mary Kay as my advocate and she's just like, you ain't going nowhere. I would try to get past this and she's like, no. I'm like, actually, so here's a confession. While I checked in, I had tucked a bag of weed at the hotel and a pipe. And I had reservations to go grab that. And I tried to get a pass and lie to Mary Kay about this pass to go get it. And to go get that. And she's like, no, you ain't going nowhere. You ain't going nowhere. You might think you are, but God has a grip on you that now that I'm not signing off on this pass and you're just, no. Wow. So I'm gritting my teeth all the way through. Like, I'm like, oh God, like, come on. Just like, what do you, I can't, I got it. Just one more. And he's like, no, come on. So I go through these classes. I start opening up my heart and I feel my heart getting more tender because I'm crying more now. And like, and I see the things, like I see brothers walking around here, like they're standing up more straight and like, they're pulling me underneath their wing. And like, I started going back to Water Walkers and the brothers there. They're like, man, aren't you look ready now? Like there's something that you, okay, let's do this. Let's walk through this now. And, yeah, it wasn't perfect. My redemption or God's redemption of me wasn't perfect. Like, but it happened. Like there's, I can't deny the work that he did while I was here. Like I can't like, and the brotherhood that I've built up here, the relationships like with my advocates, Sherry and advocates D and Michael and Fernando, like, God has shown me so many things when I was here that this is really what he had in store the whole time. Like thinking back to my dad, like when he was at GRM, he had his reservations. He left and, you know, messed up, but full redemption, full circle.
So what really made the difference? Was it that surrendering?
Yeah. So when I think of that, like when I think of that surrender, I think like when you lay your life down, all the burdens and everything, like everything that you thought you was your plan or that you thought was your calling or that you just lay that down and not pick it back up. When your chains are broken, that my chains were broken. Like I was set free by the blood of the Lamb and the word of my testimony today. I was set free, but I laid those chains down and I leave them there. I can't pick them back up. That would be a slap in God's face again, over and over again. If I just pick those chains back up and so that for me, yeah. I can't thank people more. I can't thank people enough here that have walked with me and continue to walk through with me.
Was there any one thing that impacted you the most that made you realize, no, I can never pick up those chains again?
Well, here we go. So applying here.
Really?
Finishing the program, graduating. Yeah. Walking through with all these people like that are this family now. Yeah, that's awesome. That's big and everything. But when I applied here and I was led to apply here, like I was, you know, kind of told like, you're not going anywhere. Like I tried, actually I got a job right out of here. I got an awesome construction job, like great pay, great opportunity, you know, like there was the next step, the next
benefits,
benefits, awesome benefits, like great, awesome. Everybody was promoting it. Great. That's cool and everything. But did you apply here yet? Like mentors would ask, hold on, just try. And it was big to me. It was dreaming big because it almost was too big. And God is a God of big dreams.
Yeah.
Because when we get to the Jordan and we're like this, yeah, but Egypt looks kind of cool. But he's trying to get us into the promised land, what we were promised a long time ago, our purpose. We don't see it sometimes. So I'm halfway through the Jordan and I'm like looking back at Egypt, like all this money's coming in from this new construction job. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of scary because I can see myself moving back and taking steps back. But I applied here. Sister Alicia, who was she
love
was
her.
My, yeah. Gosh, she's the best. She was my, what's it called? I'm having a brain fart.
My make a recommendation.
My reference. Yeah. So, yeah. Recommendation. So she's like, yeah, I'll give you good word here. You know, you're coming to work here. A lot of people were like, just come on. I would do the Friday fun days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would cook in the kitchens and, you know, with a team, with an awesome team. But people, while I was back there, like making pico or whatever, even Candace would come back, huh, what are you making? What you got there? Like, there's some fresh pico. You know, it's nothing big. You should just, I'm tucked away in a corner over there making pico. And she's like, huh, okay. And I knew in the back of her mind, she was probably thinking, gosh, I wish this guy would apply, you know? But like, but all glory to God, all glory to God. Like I can't, I'm not puffing myself up. But
no, that's your experience. That's, yeah. That was your gift. That's your calling. I mean, you spent a lot of time in kitchens and learning the things that most people in there go to school to learn.
Exactly. Exactly. And through that journey, like through that path, like I said, I wasted and I let Satan manipulate it, turn it into something that it wasn't all along. God built me up to this. So yeah, all that experience, I brought all that in. It was nice and everything. But when I did apply and I did actually sit down and have the interviews and get hired, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Like, this is, when you talk about ministry.
Okay, it's not just a job.
No, it's not just a restaurant job. It's not just me going back there and cooking meals. Like, it's beautiful to do that, taking all the donations and working with the community service people here and volunteers and stuff. That's a beautiful thing. But I, just the other day, let's use this for an example. Just the other day, a brother of mine here came up to me that I was in the program with, came up to me. He's like, hey, man, I'm just want to say I'm really proud of you. You're an example. You're showing us a way. You're blazing a trail. And I was like, you know what? I can't accept any of that. I'm trying to stay as humble as possible. And he's like, no, man, you don't even realize that people like the word that you give to the message that you give to people, like you're there for people that are struggling through this program. They come and confide in you. They come and seek advocacy from you sometimes. And it's bigger than just cooking an awesome meal. And I'm like, yeah, but my humble heart, it's like, I can't accept any of that because I look back and I'm like, God brought me through that all this way for this very moment for his glory, for his full redemption in that, or for his, full glory in that redemption. And I can't, man, every day I come into work, whether it's a hard day, whether I'm complaining or having a bad day, being able to like, for a brother to come to me and tell me that, like that, that's my why now. You know what I mean? People talk about a why. And that's just bigger than me, man. That's just big. I can't. It's so much bigger. And God's working here. Like this, it's not the end of just GRM, just thinking like GRM as, just a facility or just the house of God. There's talks of like casting nets and like doing things bigger, like with our mobile kitchen, like with our food truck and things like that, ministry just expanding. And I think about the prayer that my mom showed me, the prayer of Jabez. Oh, that you would bless me indeed and expand my territory, that you would not, that you remove me from evil so I will not cause pain. Like, I'm writing that up on the board. I write a scripture up on the board. I'm writing that up on the board and I'm thinking, this is the definition of what Jabez prayed. Because if you remember, his mom was like, she bore him in pain, but she spoke into him. She brought him up that way to know how to pray like that and to know how to have a bigger dream of what God can actually do in his life. And so when you pray that, you have to be careful because he's going to bless you with that. He's going to bless you indeed. He's going to enlarge your territory. And so now I see that and I'm just overwhelmed every day. Every day I walk in, I'm just like.
One of the things you would tell me over and over again is, I'm still waiting for the miracle to happen. I'm still waiting for the miracle to happen. I'm still waiting for the miracle to happen.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sorry, dude, that happened. Having that moment when you said, okay, God, you can have it all. Mm-hmm. I surrender. Let's do it your way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That may not feel like a miracle, but that's when he gets inside you and finally has, it's like, I've been waiting for this.
Yeah.
Now I can start working.
Oof.
Now that you've invited me in,
yeah,
let's take this journey and I'm going to lead you on this journey. You're going to come with me and we're going to start doing a work.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use you to do my work in this place.
Amen. Amen.
Tell me that's not a miracle.
That's It is. It's a huge miracle. It's a huge miracle. But I want more. I want to be close enough to God to the, in this walk to see more done through, maybe not just me. If it's just one soul that I save and I get to see in heaven, that's what this is about. That's what all this is about. So that's my miracle. When I finish the race, like Paul talks about, that's the one I want to see. Yeah, it is a miracle. And like I said, I told you before, I was reluctant to sit here in a testimony. I would tell Samantha all the time, no, wait. Like something's happening. So yeah, walking into work today, walking in tomorrow when I come into work at 5 a.m. and just clocking in and saying, God, show me a new miracle today in your mercy, in your grace, for your glory alone. Show me, like bring somebody across my path that I could just not just cook a meal to, but give the bread of life and show them the living water that you've blessed me with, a thirst and a hunger for. That's where my miracle is. That's where it is every day. So yeah.
Amen.
That's it. That's my why. But I want it to be somebody else's. I want to show them, you know, because that's what, you know, a lot of people talk about, like, that's what this journey is. And when you continue outside of this program, you have to lift people up, reach down and lift that brother up, reach down and be that hand or that prayer to lift people up. Yeah, it continues. And that's my walk. Not perfect. I don't do that all. Sometimes I struggle accepting saying, yeah, they're too much today, God.
Surrendering is a continual thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me walk in your will today, Lord. Show me where you want me to go.
Amen. Yeah.
One of the last questions I like to ask is if you do meet someone that is still struggling in their addiction, what single piece of advice would you give them that you think would make the most impact?
One of the things God has pressed on my heart is prison ministry, right? And eventually I'll get there. I don't think I'm completely ready yet. He'll call me, he'll make a way. But if I can reach one person that's really like struggling in their walk or like doesn't feel worth that redemption or full, you know, redemption. If I can just instill into their heart just a little tiny seed and then let the Holy Spirit water it in whatever avenue, whatever in their path, they find people to water that seed. Just instill one little seed, and that is you are worthy. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter where, like, it does not matter. Your worth and your value and your purpose is enough for God to send his only begotten son. Heaven went bankrupt to show us their worth. Every single person, it does not matter who you are, where you've gone, anything. That is wiped away by the blood that has been shed by his only begotten son. And it really happened. Like people think it's become so watered down that like the crucifixion and the beating and the brokenness that God watched his son go through. Jesus asked him to take the cup from him because he knew he was bearing all these sins from everybody. But it happened. It happened. And I'm trying to like pour out like my heart to people. And I will continue to do that because that is your worth. You are worth a man of no sin to take on your sin. That's what you're worth. You're worth him to take the nails. It was worth it for him to stretch out his arms on a cross and be humiliated and take the punishment that we deserve. And I just keep seeing a picture of him turning over to the man that was hanging on a cross next to him, saying, "Today I will see you in paradise."
Mm-hmm.
I need people to realize that that's a moment where I think that man that was hanging on the cross finally realized, like, wow, you are the Son of God. Wow, this is really happening. Wow, I am going to see you in paradise because of what you're doing right here next to me. Like, I can't imagine that. Like, it blows my mind that people, like, still think that that's just a cliche or that's just a story that you learned in Bible school. It happened. He shed his blood, and you're worth it. You're worth it.
That was true then, and it's true today.
Yeah.
And we still haven't seen the full impact of the value of that moment,
mm-hmm.
you know?
No.
It still resonates.
Yeah, like Hebrews says, like through Hebrews 11, the hall, you know, like they haven't seen it. They haven't seen it. Yeah, so we will one day, and I want to take as many people. When I do cook meals and the community service people come in, you know, volunteers and everybody, and as I walk through this place, I'm like, this is what heaven is going to look like. Because there's all I see is a bunch of people surrendering their lives and finally realizing their worth, finally realizing their value. And I'm looking around, it's like in that song, like people say, this is what heaven looks like. Well, this is kind of cool. Can't wait to see all these people up in heaven because it's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. And I really pray that if this testimony impacts just one person, just remember, like, as hard as it gets, we'll struggle, we'll fail, but you're still worth it. He's still dying on the cross. He still shed his blood. And that blood is enough for me. Pray that it's enough for you.
Powerful message.
Thank you.
Powerful message. Well, thank you, Mateo, for sharing that with us today.
Yeah.
I feel honored that you felt comfortable enough to share that with me, so thank you.
Thank you for allowing me and giving me this little platform that I can't take, as humble as you see it is. But it is a platform that I pray that God gets all the glory.
If you would like to support our ministry, or if you know someone who needs help in the Tucson area, please give us a call at 520-740-1501 or visit us online at grmtucson.com. Thank you.